Thanks for listening to the Best of the Doug Gottlieb Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 3 to 6 p.m. Eastern Time, that's 12 to 3 Pacific, on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Doug Gottlieb Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
This is the Best of the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio.
What up, America? Doug Gottlieb Show, Fox Sports Radio. In the Where's Waldo, I'm in a really cool place for sports fans. Now, it happens to be a place where my alma mater escaped earlier this year, but a really cool place for sports fans where I am at Albertsons Stadium. You're like, you're at Albertsons? Hey, can you pick me up with some milk and some... You're like, no, okay. I'm at Albertsons Stadium, and I'm broadcasting live because we're going to do the basketball game tonight where St. Louis comes into town and takes on Boise State, so I get to be high above the Smurf turf. If you follow me on social media, you can see that I am in the press box above the famous blue field of Boise State University. I can see the mountains in the background. It's just a glorious... late fall. Are we into winter? I think we're into winter. Tomorrow's December 1st, so we're into winter, right? I don't really know. I still consider it fall regardless. Man, we got a lot to get to. We appreciate you joining the show and listening to us for all these years and all these different places. Let's get after it, shall we? Okay. So, we had an NFL game last night. I mean... It wasn't a good NFL game. It was close and interesting. And the Washington football team lost their kicker after he had a kick blocked, trying to chase him down. So it changed kind of some of the strategy. But all in all, Taylor Heinicke did his best Russell Wilson impression. Russell Wilson did his best, I don't know, I don't even know who he looked like last night, but it didn't look like Russell Wilson. And the Washington football team gets to win. And you know what? Zero people care. Because what we've had is a tectonic or titanic or... Well, let's go with sea change. You guys like sea change better? Or do you like tectonic shift? Tectonic shift is the plates, right? It's what causes the ring of fire. You guys know? How about sea change? Right? We've had a massive sea change in college football. In the 10 or 15 biggest jobs in the sport, Notre Dame, USC, Oklahoma, LSU, frankly, Virginia Tech, all in that mix. And now as the music begins to stop, we see who has a chair and who does not. This show is brought to you by one of our favorite cities, Las Vegas, the greatest arena on earth. Plan your trip today at visitlasvegas.com. Look, we do a terrible job in the media. But what we do in the media, and there's all different kinds of media, right? There is traditional media where they're just there to cover the stories and be as neutral as possible. There's big mouth yakkers like myself and others who give you opinion and are supposed to also give you the facts. And if they are going to speculate, you're supposed to say, I'm totally speculating here. We do a terrible job in the media, though, of not really explaining why. So I've called basketball games for 20 years now. Damn, I'm old. I don't feel old. I love doing it. I remember playing. Didn't feel like that long ago, but it was literally 20 years ago. So I've been doing this for 20 years. And when I first, my first real mentor in the job, the guy who hired me to do games at ESPN, was a guy named Dan Steer. Pete Derzis gave me my first shot. Thank you, Pete. Big Alabama Birmingham guy. Pete's a legend in the industry. He was awesome. Okay, but he didn't necessarily mentor me in how to actually execute a broadcast. In a broadcast, when you're calling a game, you're the color analyst. Your job is to explain why. Not what. The TV, self-explanatory, and the play-by-play guy, they say what. Your job is why. That's our job at times on radio. To say why and then give an opinion of the why. We don't do that. We say the what. And we allow you many times to formulate your own opinion. Cowher doesn't do it. I don't think Dan Patrick. I don't think the Fox Sports Radio guys do it for the most part. I do think there's a lot of other people that do the what and don't do the why. Or do the what, react to the what, and then it makes you think you know the why when it doesn't. Brian Kelly takes the LSU job. Why? Why? Well, I would say there's a litany of reasons. Do I think $95 million over 10 years is a big reason? Hell yeah. I got to move from South Bend, where I've been over a decade. House probably paid off, got everything dialed in. Like, it's kind of light lifting, even for recruiting or whatever. Like, you know everybody, you know the guys, you know where you're going to go get to get players. That thing, you kind of got it all built. Once you've been somewhere for 5-6 years, you got a fiefdom there. So in order to get me out of my current job, you got to overpay me. And it became the going rate, considering what happened at Michigan State, right? Well, if Michigan State's not $95 million, damn skippy that LSU has $95 million. So is the money a factor? Of course it is. And part of the money being a factor is Notre Dame, kind of cheap. Not like cheap, hey, let's buy double-ply toilet paper and peel it in half and then only use the single-ply. Not that kind of cheap, but definitely in the cheaper sort of toilet paper aisle. Definitely in the kind of the mantra that some really, really exclusive brands have where they go, you know, end of the day, it's kind of an honor for you to work for us. We're Notre Dame. We're the foremost Catholic institution in the United States. We're the foremost private college football program in the United States. We're Notre Dame. And you know what? That sounds really, really, really good. Really good. Until somebody blows you out of the water. Like, look, this is what happened with Urban Meyer back when he took the Florida job. Notre Dame offered him a job, offered him $2 million a year. Florida offered him $4 million a year. Won 2 national championships at Florida. In addition to which, Notre Dame probably should pay you more because it's a harder job. Yes, LSU is in the SEC and everybody's, you know, buying players and buying dudes and it's the wild, wild west. And, oh, okay. But in order to get somebody in school, it's harder. To keep somebody in school, it's harder. And this is a guy who had to leave Notre Dame. I can tell you that it's a legit academic institution of higher learning. Not that LSU isn't, not that you can't get a great degree, but there's a different level of work ethic it takes in the classroom to just get into Notre Dame, let alone succeed at Notre Dame, survive at Notre Dame, then succeed at Notre Dame, that it does not take at some of the schools in the SEC. That's what everyone knows. And at some point you go like, don't want to bang my head against the wall and complain that we can't get these guys in school, right? Because in order to take the next step, Notre Dame would get to the college football playoff and consistently they just didn't have the dudes. They had the offensive linemen. They had some skill position players, you know, but the margin for error was so slight. Obviously the year they were in the, what was that, the Cotton Bowl and a terrible injury to Jalen Smith, right? But, I mean, Jalen Smith was an absolute freak. Great student, good person, horrific injury. But one thing is clear, like replacing him, they had Mantu Te'o. They've had dudes on the defensive side of the ball. But in order to compete at the highest level, you got to have, and we've talked about this before with Jimbo Fisher and what he said when he got to Texas A&M, everybody has to be on board. And it's not just saying you're on board, it's, hey, can we get guys in school, and then can we find ways to keep them in school? Some guys you got to hold their hand. Some guys you got to, you know, constantly in study hall. The problem is there's not a lot of majors to hide guys. There's not really any majors to hide guys in there. You know, they don't have criminal justice. They don't have, you know, starting bonfires. They don't have basket weaving. Like, it's a real school. And I think if you're Brian Kelly, you sit there and go like, look, I've done this. I've got Notre Dame stabilized. I've become, wins-wise, the most successful coach in the history of Notre Dame. We've gotten to a national semifinal. We've gotten to prestigious bowl games. We've had top draft picks. We've had our kids graduate college. This is, I mean, literally, we need a dream season and one more step to get there, and it's really hard to get there. It's really hard. So, you're 60 years old, and somebody says, hey, what if I gave you about $100 million to give it one legit shot to win the whole thing? You got to a BCS bowl game when you're at Cincinnati. You got to a national semifinal when you're at Notre Dame. But in order to take that last step, This is a place where everybody is consumed by one thing: winning. Notre Dame wants to win, but they also want great student athletes. They also want guys that represent their brand and have done the work in the class. Like, there's a limit there. There's a few number of favors in terms of getting guys in school. And, oh yeah, by the way, the last part is, it's a lot easier to get guys to go to school when their parents don't have to get on a plane to come see them or to come see them play. Right? Think about it now. Texas is now open for business for the SEC with two schools in the state of Texas, and Louisiana is a wellspring of talent. Gone are the days of having to fight over kids from Ohio or go down to Miami and convince them to get on a plane and play in the cold. Now, here's what we do a terrible job. We make it out like Brian Kelly's the worst guy ever for sending a group text to his team that he was going to meet with them at 7 a.m. And then we say, hey, why'd you only meet with them for 11 minutes? Like, hey, guess what? This stuff happens fast. Recruiting happens right away. Brian Kelly does not have the option of, you know, I need a week to think about it. Like, no, that doesn't work that way. Doesn't work that way. They call you, they offer you $95 million, and they go, hey, man, you got till end of business to decide. Okay, I got to talk some details. We talk some details. We meet with some people. We think about things. And then, all right, I want to do it. Okay, listen, don't tell anybody. We won't tell anybody. We'll announce it tomorrow morning. You can meet with your team tomorrow morning at 7 a.m. Great. Here's the problem. Somebody always leaks it. And usually it's the agent who wants to do the victory lap. Sometimes it's somebody within the university. Sometimes it's an underling in the athletic department. But it is almost never the actual coach or somebody connected directly to the coach. It is almost never the actual university. They want fanfare. They don't want to put it on Twitter. They don't want to retweet somebody. Oh, why do you only talk to Notre Dame's kids for 11 minutes? Well, do you think Notre Dame wanted him having one-on-one conversations with his best players? Hey, you know what? This is great, but what if I said you could play in the SEC? It's 15 degrees warmer. The classes are 15% easier, and the girls are 100% better looking. Of course they don't want him talking to his players because he's going to take the players with him, you dopes. We do a terrible job. We vilify anybody who's in power. And we sit there and go like, well, what about player movement? Like, look, the players actually get to move and they don't have to buy a buyout. Players don't affect entire universities, entire athletic departments, entire coaching staffs, families, kids, all this different stuff. Coaches do. I get there's a right way and a wrong way to do stuff. But this is how it happens. The regular season is over. People are recruiting. And if you're not recruiting for LSU, you're recruiting for Notre Dame. If you're not recruiting for Oklahoma, you're recruiting for USC. You got an hour to make a call, dude. We're going to offer you $100 million. Basically a lifetime contract. You will never have to work another day in your life. When you're done, if we fire you or you retire, you can buy a beach. Not a place on a beach, buy a damn beach. So I get it. Like, we all get hurt because we think, you know, that there's some sort of, like, no, man. These guys are the front door to the university. They dramatically affect everything within the university when they're successful. And just like any other job, when you take a new job, you don't, at that very moment, they don't call your boss and go like, hey, he took the new job with, you know, Sirius XM, or he took a new job with Fox. Like, no, that's not how it works. Here's Notre Dame defensive captain Kyle Hamilton. There's an Inside the Garage podcast that's on The Volume, which is Colin Cowherd's new podcast network. He had this to say about the coaches leaving.
At the end of the day, I understand he has to do what's best for him and what's best for his family, what he thinks is best for his family. And, I mean, players transfer all the time. And I'm not going to say whether or not I think it's a good decision or not. That's up to him. It's not for me to judge. But, I mean, I understand where he's coming from and the situation that he's been in. He's done a lot for the program here, done more than I think anybody expected him to do before he got here, and that's had a big impact on where Notre Dame is now today. I mean, we have had 5 straight 10-win seasons, and that definitely does not happen without him.
No question. Notre Dame was a sleeping giant. It was a complete mess, okay? A complete mess. Brian Kelly gets there, wins 12 games, and goes to a BCS National Championship game in his third season. In 2016, the roof fell in. They had a 10-win season the year before, lost in the Fiesta Bowl. I actually think that's when Jalen Smith got hurt, if I remember correctly. Maybe I think so. Now, maybe that was the Cotton Bowl. That was the Cotton Bowl in 18? Anyway, they won four games in 2016, and he revamped some of his style. He changed some of his coaching. He changed some of his staff. And you know what? It worked. 10-3, 12-1, 11-2, 10-2, 11-1. Like, look, dude, outside of winning the whole thing, he did everything he was supposed to do. They suffered an incredible tragedy early on. And then, of course, they had the terrible season. And enough people stuck by him where he kept his job because there were people who wanted to run him out. We talked about him with him on this show. I'm not a Brian Kelly defender. I just think the guy's a really good football coach. And he wants to do one thing, and that's win. And LSU is a place where they don't care about much. You yell at our players. They don't care. If you just go win. Get good players and good kids. Go win games. I don't know if it works. But I can tell you that's the why. That's the legit why.
Be sure to catch live editions of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
Doug Gottlieb Show, Fox Sports Radio. So, you guys remember when the Eagles won the Super Bowl, right? And they talked about how, oh, they like to have fun. New England doesn't have fun. Apparently, Chase Claypool, talented young wide receiver, Pittsburgh Steelers, suggested to Mike Tomlin that he would play music at practice because it'd make it more fun. This is Mike Tomlin's response.
Well, you know, Claypool plays wide out, and I'll let him do that. I'll formulate the practice approach, and I think that division of labor is probably appropriate.
It's a great line, right? Division of labor. It's like church and state. We're going to keep church and state separate. That's like, I hear you. That is a generational thing where guys, everybody says, I want to be heard. You're not listening. Like, no. I'm not sure if you understand that listening doesn't actually mean I'm going to do what you ask me to do. Right? The difference in this generation and previous generation is that the previous generation would ask you to listen and your parents, adults, they weren't even like, no. We're not listening. We don't need new ideas. We know what we're going to do, and that's what we're going to do. So the difference is now this generation, I want to be heard. I got to be heard. I want to be heard. Why aren't you listening to me? Understood. But listening to you and actually doing what you want because you think it's best are two very different things. Two very different things. But it is funny, right? Got it. Put it in the suggestion box. We'll think about it. Now get out there and practice. Doug Gottlieb Show here on Fox Sports Radio. I had a bit of an abdominal issue as well. So what I did was I ordered some takeout and ate it. And now the abdominal issue is gone. I would suggest that I had a pain in my below the chest, above the belly button.
Where'd you order it from?
Hold on, I got to get the name of this place. I'll give him a little bit of love here. And we're on in Boise.
Well, here's the thing, though. There are logistical challenges for food to be delivered when you're doing a show in a football press box when there's no game going on. So good for them.
It's a great point. I want to thank Mike who brought it up for me. He set us up. He's the SID for basketball. And I texted him just like, hey, I'm going to come down and get this thing during a break. Can you keep an eye on it? And he's like, nah, I brought it upstairs for you. So... let's see here. It's from Meraki Greek Street Food. And I got a, believe it or not, I got a, like a, what would you call it? I mean, normally you'd call it a shawarma. I got a pork shawarma and I got some halloumi fries, which are really salty, like salt lick salty. Like it's a lot.
So is it food from Greece or is it from a place on Greek Street in Boise? Because you know Petros Papadakis, he had his wedding in Greece, so it's a whole theme today for you.
Yeah, and his dad owns a Greek restaurant.
That's right.
No, it is from Greek Street. I think that's the. I don't know if it's the street name Greek. I think it's actually just called Greek Street. Pretty good too. Not bad. I was so hungry, man. I basically did the fasting thing without trying to fast. So, all right, we're going to get to Chris Sims in a second. I'll get his thoughts on Lincoln Riley, his thoughts on Brian Kelly, but also his thoughts in the NFL. Like, what do we do with Seattle? What do you do there? What do you do? Chris Sims joins us on the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio. Let's start with the big college news. I know you don't cover college as much. I know you were covering Notre Dame. But Brian Kelly leaving Notre Dame for LSU, what's your immediate reaction?
I'm shocked by the Notre Dame thing, I guess, to a degree. You know, I'm shocked, but I'm not. I guess I'm shocked because it's Notre Dame. It's so prestigious. You know, it's such a wanted job. And I guess where I'm not shocked is the fact that it's hard to win a national championship at Notre Dame. And I'm sure Brian Kelly's sick of being held to the standard of like, hey, you need to win the national championship. Yet they have incredible academic standards there that, you know, of course, compromise some of the players and the guys they get at that football and on that football team. So I think it is hard that way. Of course, being underpaid that way as compared to some of the other schools right now, those are all little issues. So I guess that's where I'm not shocked, but I guess I'm shocked just because of the prestige of Notre Dame. I guess I should say I'm shocked because of the prestige of Notre Dame kind of takes a shot here. You know, that's where I look at it. I mean, I know LSU's a really awesome, special place. You're going to the SEC. You got incredible competition. I know that, but I also don't view LSU, you know, in the lures of college football in the same class as Notre Dame. So I guess that's where it's a little surprising. Another thing, too, Doug, I'll just say, you know, I'm going to be interested to see the culture clash there a little. You know, I can speak personally to this, coming from the Northeast and going to a school like Texas, man, there was a faction of people that just hated me. They were never going to accept me. I was a Yankee to them, and they had issues with the Yankee being their starting quarterback. Well, you know, he's a guy from Boston. He's very in-your-face, Massachusetts-type attitude. You know, there's no sugarcoating anything at all. And I do wonder how the culture clash will work there. And vice versa with Lincoln Riley in USC, a guy from Texas going to a city slicker Hollywood, USC. I'm interested to see how that works as well.
Chris Sims, our guest on the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio. I put you in charge of everything in Seattle. What do you do?
I would blow the roster up. I mean, that would be the first thing I would do after the year. It's got to start back from scratch, and they need to rebuild. You know, they've tried to hang on to the Legion of Boom and put Band-Aids on holes in their roster for years and years, let alone, of course, they've missed on some draft picks. So I think that's the first thing I would look at, no doubt. There's just so many issues on the football team to where, hey, offensive line's not good. Defensive line has nobody special. The two safeties are good and Bobby Wagner on defense, but that's all you got there on that side of the ball. You know, the offensive scheme is not creative. And Pete Carroll, in my opinion, has maybe failed to adjust to the modern-day NFL here the last few years. And I think it's cost them. I don't know if I would get rid of Pete Carroll. I don't think I would do that. So I'm going to say that right off the bat, if that was kind of the question you were asking or wanted me to go down to. No, I still have faith in him as his ability to, you know, motivate a football team, get them to play hard. There's still a lot of fundamental things that they do correct. But, you know, as far as his ability to pick the right offensive coordinator and their ability to pick players as of late, yeah, there's certainly some question marks there.
It's Doug Gottlieb Show here on Fox Sports Radio. Why aren't the Rams better?
Well, all right, there's a few things here. You know, the Rams, first off, basic premise, got to stop shooting yourself in the foot. You know, can't be down 10-0 before you even break a sweat in the football game. Now, that's what we're seeing from them more than not here as of late. So many early game mistakes, so they never really get into a flow on the offensive side of the ball and really get to stick with their game plan. They're not running the ball quite as well as we've seen in years past. They become a little bit too much of a just drop back pass football team. And I'll say it, and I'm one of his biggest defenders, Matthew Stafford's just not playing that great. There's too many throws I watch on film right now where I go, that needs to be hit by average quarterbacks in the NFL. Matthew Stafford, I expect him to hit that 999 times out of 1,000. So he's missing throws, certainly. He's made a few bad decisions. The defense has to be more creative and aggressive, in my opinion. You know, First off, $20 million to Jalen Ramsey. You got to play him man-to-man more. They did a little more last week against Green Bay. I need to see a lot more of that. They're a little basic on defense. They don't disguise all that well. Man, you know, if you're that's fine if you want to be basic and not disguise, but then you better be really sound and have some guys that are going to make some splash plays. And right now they're not doing that. They're kind of mess up things from time to time, and nobody's making plays. And so that's their issues right now. I'd like to see the defense be a little more creative in the fact of, like, Jalen Ramsey, have him match up against the Davante Adams of the world, play some crazy coverage with the other six DBs and linebackers on the other side of the field, and figure out ways with your front four to get pressure on the quarterback. Aaron Donald is still awesome. He's not, I don't think, the slam dunk best defensive player in football anymore. Von Miller needs to show up a little bit more. And Leonard Floyd, same there goes for him. But there's a few issues across the board. I'm not panicked about them totally yet, Doug, though. I do think they can fix the mistakes they're making and still be a good football team. They hung in there for a while with Green Bay and had chances, even with those early mistakes and being down 10-0. But, again, mistakes then struck once again with the pick six, and you muff a punt, and then the game's over.
How good are the Patriots in reality? I know they've played really well recently, but how good are they in reality?
They're really good. I mean, I think they're one of the best teams in football. I think they're the best team in the AFC right now. I do. You know, I look at them. I still am going to put Tennessee in that category, and I'm getting close to maybe putting Kansas City back in that category. I'd like to see maybe one more week. But with New England, you know, Doug, it's of course the management of the football game's perfect. The game plans are perfect. We know that. But there's real talent on the defensive side of the ball right now. And I know in weeks past I've told you about their run game. But you're seeing here as of late, like last week, okay, the run game's not that great this week. Well, look, their pass game, it can make plays and do some special things as well. And that's where I look at it, where they don't make mistakes. They don't mess up the game. They're great in all situations. And then they got some talent. And I think the offense has finally grasped, you know, the system, all the new players, you know, the pressure's off that way. And I think you're starting to see the fruits of that labor. And, yes, I think if you're going to ask me against anybody in the AFC right now, I'm taking New England.
Anybody, even the Chiefs?
I would. Right now, at this moment, I do. You know, again, I need to see more from the Chiefs' offense. I think that would be the thing I want to see. I have no problem saying I think that the New England defense, which I think is better than the Green Bay Packers, can slow down, or the Dallas Cowboys can slow down the Kansas City Chiefs on that side of the ball. I got no problem saying that. Kansas City's defense been a lot better, no doubt. But I think a lot of New England's offensive line, and of course they always have a few creative schemes in the pass game to get guys open. So, yeah, I'm saying that. I would take New England over anybody in the AFC right now at this moment.
It's Doug Gottlieb Show here on Fox Sports Radio. Let's go to the NFC. Let's talk some Giants. Giants looked terrible 2 weeks ago, looked really good this past week. Granted, it's against the Eagles. And it's hard to tell. It feels like Gettleman is going to be gone. What about Danny Dimes? Should he be the starting quarterback next year with the Giants?
Yeah, listen, it's a tough call. I am a believer, and I guess I give Daniel Jones the benefit of the doubt to a degree. You know, it's hard to play quarterback behind the worst offensive line in football to start your career. I mean, it's the worst. There's no other way to say it. So, he's tough as hell, but I don't care how tough you are. When the first thing you got to look at is to see if you're getting blocked or have enough time to actually throw the ball down the field, man, is it hard to play quarterback that way. So I am a guy that sits there and thinks you can win with him. Is he going to be a superstar, Patrick Mahomes, Josh Allen? No, he's not. You know, he's more along the lines of a guy that needs a system. He can make smart decisions. But, you know, that's where I give him the benefit of the doubt. I do. You know, I'm one that I want them to keep Joe Judge. You know, again, Eagles have been playing pretty good football lately. Eagles have more talent than the Giants, for sure. The Eagles may be arguably top five offensive line in football, one of the better D-lines in football, got a shutdown corner in Darius Slay, got some talent at receiver, got Dallas Goedert at tight end. You know, there's a lot of things there. And to me, this is where I defend Joe Judge to go, their talent's not on the same level as the Eagles. But there they were and beat them and outplayed them for a lot of the day. And that's where I'd like to see them give Joe Judge one more shot and Daniel Jones one more shot and hopefully get a GM in there that can fix a few of the issues on the roster. But, you know, one of the worst pass rushes in football, one of the worst offensive lines in football, really no modern-day three-down linebackers that can cover tight ends and stop the run. You know, they overpaid Bradbury as far as he's a good corner, but he's not like an elite shutdown corner. And then overpaid Kenny Galladay. Saquon's been injured a lot. There's been a lot of issues that have led to some questionable moments for Daniel Jones and Joe Judge, in my opinion. And, yes, a lot of that does fall back on Gettleman. Sorry for the long answer there, man, but that was a deep answer.
No, I mean, it's obviously something that you know really, really well and have a strong opinion on. What about the Cowboys? They're not going to have Mike McCarthy this week, but
right.
Really disappointing loss to the Raiders. And I know you don't have your two best wide receivers, but it ain't like the Raiders aren't without guys. Why aren't the Cowboys better?
Yeah, you know, haven't been as dominant up front in the run game. I think that would be one thing I'd look at. You know, the pass game, I think, could use a splash more of creativity. You know, I think they fell into the trap of like, hey, we're running the ball and we're talented outside. And Dak, he hits you when you're open and we don't need to do a whole lot. I'd like to see them, you know, trick it up a little bit more. And I don't mean like trick plays, but just add a few more things to their offense. I think that's what jumps out to me over the last few weeks. Dak has not been playing his best either, physically or mentally, I'll say that. And defensively, I think we're seeing a little bit finally what they are. You know, we know they're better than last year. And, yeah, they were making some turnovers and some big plays and some big moments early on in the year. But this is something I questioned on my podcast all year. You know, I was a little amazed. I just was going, I don't know if they can continue this. And I think, you know, you're seeing they can't really play man-to-man coverage. If they do, it's pass interference. If they play zone against the Raiders, man, they just were going to pick them apart all day long. So the defense isn't great, and they don't have a great defensive line. They need Dexter Lawrence back to help them out, or DeMarcus Lawrence, excuse me, to get the pass rush going. But it really falls on the offense, I think, that needs to kind of raise their game for that football team.
Chris Sims, our guest in the Doug Gottlieb Show here on Fox Sports Radio. Okay, so I'm watching and I'm trying to figure out, how did Leonard Fournette become this dynamic pass catcher? Like, how does that happen? Guy didn't catch passes in college, okay. Doesn't catch passes. Last year in the playoffs, it looked uncomfortable with him catching the football. Now all of a sudden, he leads the league and backs in receptions for a running back.
Yeah, you know, in college, not that he got the ball thrown his way a whole lot, but he always looked comfortable doing it. I remember my assessment of him coming out of LSU. I didn't think like, oh, man, he'll add no value to the pass game. You know, and I think he understands, man, I'm with a quarterback and an offensive system, you know, and once Giovanni Bernard, you know, had some injuries and had to deal with that, I think he realized like, wait, I got to pay attention to this part of the game a little bit more. And, you know, with all the weapons they have and their ability to push the ball down the field, I know, I think the offense and he both realize, like, man, I can get some favorable matchups here underneath with on linebackers and guys that are not as athletic as me. So that he's a freak of nature. You know, there's a reason he was picked at number four. You know, he was stuck behind in a bad offense in Jacksonville with a quarterback who, you know, could not throw the ball and people just put nine people in the box all the time. He was better there than people realize, and now he's on a team that has the ability to accentuate his abilities a little bit. And he's not running into, you know, nine-man defensive fronts all the time. You can see he's big, he's powerful, he's got game-breaking speed to 30-yard touchdowns and can catch the ball and has found a nice little niche and seems like he's really become a little bit of a leader in that offense as well.
Chris, you're the best, man. Hope you had a good Thanksgiving. Merry Christmas to you and your family, and thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Doug. I'll talk to you next week. See ya.
Be sure to catch live editions of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
Colorado, Pennsylvania. I forgot all the states. Got to be legal, okay? Gambling problem, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Let's get to the let's get to this. Tiger Woods had a press conference for the first time since his car accident. This is what he said when he was asked if he'd ever play again.
As far as playing at the tour level, I don't know when that's going to happen. Now, I'll play around here and there. I'm able to participate in the sport of golf. Now, to what level, I do not know that.
Okay. So he wants to play some, but he doesn't know what level. He was asked if he thought he could come back and do it again. Here's his response.
My hands and feel started coming back, but then the aches and pains started coming. So, you know, back to the ice bath again. So it would be one of those things where I don't have the endurance to stay out there for long periods of time. But the fact that I'm able to do it is exciting. There was a period in time where it didn't look like I was going to be able to do it again.
So obviously he's encouraged that he can actually play golf. And here's his answer on walking without a limp.
I'm lucky to be alive, but also still have the limb. Those are two crucial things, you know. So I'm very, very grateful that someone upstairs was taking care of me, that I'm able to not only be here, but also to walk without a prosthesis.
Crazy, right? He almost lost his... Can you imagine if Tiger Woods had a prosthetic leg? Like, think about, like, do we... Like, I don't want to think even more gruesome, like he, you know, obviously could have died from it. But can you imagine it's like now on the tee, Tiger Woods, and like, and you know the prosthetic limb would be sponsored, right? It's golf. But can you imagine if Eldrick Tiger Woods, like the biggest, really the biggest sports figure post Michael Jordan, is at the tee with a prosthetic leg? Like that's, we were close to that. Yes, Jason Stewart.
What was it? Casey Martin? Who had that controversy about needing a golf cart and whatnot. Now, yeah. What if Tiger Woods wanted to play in a tournament and he's like, I need to use a golf cart?
I don't want to speak out of turn. Can you remind me of what... I know Casey Martin had something genetic or that was going on. Do you remember what exactly it was?
Yeah, I don't know. It was definitely was a deterioration of the leg muscle. I don't know what his exact... I'll look it up.
Ilo, do you know what it was off the top of your head?
What do I look like, Google?
Yes, actually, you kind of do.
Well,
you sound like Google. If Google had a voice, it would be Isaac Lohenkron.
You know, I'm glad you answered that way because it was actually a rhetorical question. Actually, Jason had a birth defect in his right leg, so that's that was his situation. By the way, he's now the head golf coach at Oregon. By the way.
But what does it cause? What is it? A birth defect causes him what?
All right. It's called Klippel-Trenaunay syndrome, a rare condition in which blood vessels and lymph vessels fail to form properly. So it causes hypertrophy of the affected limb. Hypertrophy means the muscles don't grow. Am I correct? Something like that. I know that's what happened when I used to try and work out at the gym. So.
Right. Okay. Do I think there'd be a controversy? No. If Tiger Woods wants to drive his golf course, drive his golf cart through the golf course, you know, and you're supposed to drive what perpendicular to the cart path, he can drive parallel to the cart path. Nobody would care. But pretty crazy. He almost lost a leg. I felt like he didn't announce his retirement, but he basically said like, "Hey, I'm only going to be showing up for big events that I have to show up for." That's what it felt like. But it did feel like he had some good perspective. It felt like he played golf again and that, you know, they're encouraged by his comeback, but he's reasonable about it. Stug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio. Lincoln Riley was a guest of Colin Cowherd's on The Herd today. He talked about how sudden it was, the move to USC.
It was very sudden. I was totally committed to our team as we made a championship and playoff run, and made that very clear to anybody that was interested. And yeah, we got to Norman late Saturday night, early Sunday morning, had a conversation that USC had some serious interest, and slept for a couple hours, woke up, had a conversation with the USC people, and you could feel their energy. I mean, you could feel the leadership from the very top is willing to do the things that maybe haven't been done here as of recent to get USC to where it needs to be.
This was Riley and Cowherd talking about OU's decision to go to the SEC.
This is not a shot at the SEC, but you didn't get a say on Oklahoma going to the SEC. Was there a little part of that ever that was that in the decision at all, that you're a Big 12 guy and a Big 12 coach and SEC? Was that part of it?
0%. The leadership at OU was fantastic, communicating with me throughout that process, asked feedback. Certainly not saying I made the decision by any stretch, but I was able to give some feedback and be a part of those discussions. And I think it's going to be a great move for OU. I do. And that had no part of it. This decision really and truly, no matter what anybody thinks on the outside, was about this opportunity for so many different reasons, for my family, for the opportunity that we believed in as far as what USC could be and what we could do to help USC. And it was just the right challenge at the right time. So, like, no, it had nothing to do with it. I do think what we do is going to translate well out here, and can't wait to get it implemented and started.
Here's how difficult the decision it was for him.
I honestly didn't think I would do it. I really didn't. And it was a tough decision. I mean, there is no denying that. I mean, leaving not just the quality of program at Oklahoma, but the people there, the relationships. I mean, that was 7 years of my life.
This is Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio. We're listening to Lincoln Riley, who sat down with Colin Cowherd on his couch earlier today. Riley did get emotional in his press conference talking about leaving Oklahoma.
I'd be... I think it would not be fitting for me to recognize the University of Oklahoma, the impact that it had on me, the people there. This was obviously, I told the team earlier, toughest decision of my life to come here. And it's those people there were tremendous to me. And so, thank you. I'm grateful for them. I'm grateful for my time here. That's one of the best college football programs in the country, and has been forever and will continue to be. So very thankful for my time here.
Here was Lincoln at his press conference talking about how quickly you can turn around a program these days.
In this day and age, I think it can happen quickly. I do. I think there's a lot of good things going on in this program right now that we can absolutely build on. I think in this day and age, with the way college football works, you can turn over rosters in so many different ways, and we'll be very very deliberate and creative and intentional about that. And with, again, the combination of the staff we're going to bring in, the players we're going to bring in, the leadership that we have, the support we have, again, getting our former players so involved with this program, which is incredibly important to me. I just look at it like, how can we not do it? You know, how's it not going to work?
Jay Stu, you think it works?
I do. I love it. It's the one program that I've been following, and I've been embarrassed by the last 5 years. So I think we got the best guy out there. I think it's great.
Man, I think they got a good young guy who's got great energy and a good name, you know, to go and get dudes. And I don't think they waited too long, right? Like, I think there's a good window. I think they're helped out. Look, you have to be helped out by other programs in your area, in your state, not killing it, right? And USC is almost always going to beat UCLA for guys. But can you beat UCLA, Stanford, and Cal, you know, and Oregon? And I think what it does is it shuts off some of the water with these kids leaving and going to the SEC. Not all of them, you'll lose some of them, but if you can make SC cool again, then, I mean, there's just so many players. Now you have to pick the right ones, and, you know, you can't pick divisive ones, but I definitely think you can get some players and make it happen relatively quickly.
My question for you is this. You know that dual threat quarterback that he's had a lot of success with at Oklahoma? USC just hasn't had that kind of quarterback. Do you think that he brings in those quarterbacks the next few years?
Well, they have. I mean, Jackson Dart's good, right?
He's very talented. I just don't know if he has the skill set that that Lincoln Riley typically looks for.
Yeah, I mean, Baker wasn't a runner.
That's
Baker
true.
Baker wasn't a runner, and the only reason they took Jalen, they took as a transfer. I mean, all three of them are transfers. So he's been able to work with transfers. Jalen was one that didn't sit out with him, didn't know the system coming in for a year, and they just kind of turned him into a runner by the end of the year. So, I think they'll be. I think it's fine. I mean, you just got to pick the right guys, and you know, part of the magic to it is picking the right guys, at the that other people want to play with. Like, you can get the best player, but sometimes just dudes don't like them. That's a really, really hard one. Sometimes guys just don't like guys. And you got to know who you're getting and who they're connected to and who likes them and who doesn't like them. Like, that's all kind of part of this deal, believe it or not. Yes, John Ramos.
So the very first cut we played, which is Lincoln Riley basically saying, they gave me a call, I slept on it, and the next day they sound energized, which they should because they were horrible. So why wouldn't they be energized, right? I mean, they're going to get Lincoln Riley. And he's like, I'm in. I heard someone say he only had 1 year left on his contract. Is that correct? So he can get out of his – does Oklahoma get anything out of – if he got out early, I don't know. That's always part I'm interested in. It's like, can you just walk away from a program like Brian Kelly's like, see you guys later.
Well, it's a buyout.
Okay, so they buy him out. So USC buys out Lincoln Riley to Oklahoma?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. I think Brian Kelly's buyout was $5 million.
Oh, jeez.
What's
a lot. I mean, to me, that's a lot of money to buy out.
It's a lot of money.
A coach.
It's a ton of money.
And then another question I have is, and I asked this to Jason. So Brian Kelly's team is 11-1. He's done, right? Like, he's gone.
Yes.
So
yes.
He doesn't coach an 11-1 team, and they're done. They just, like, walk away?
No, somebody else coach him.
No, I know somebody else, but, I mean, he the team's, like, 11-1. Like, aren't they?
Well, I don't think he wants to walk away. I think that's kind of part of the deal.
No, I know. Like, well, you don't want him to coach the team if he's leaving, but it just seems so, like they couldn't wait for, like, another month before
no.
they...
Okay. No, recruiting, dude.
All right.
You just can't. I mean, like, listen, right now it's December 1st tomorrow. Just so people understand, in terms of signing, it's not just the signing days, right? It's not just that. It's that you have a good number of players, okay? A good number of players who want to enroll early. So they're going to be there, like, basically January 1st. They'll be on campus for spring football. You can't wait until the college football playoff is over. You're done. You lost a year. Plus, all these kids are in the portal. They're all going to transfer semester as well. What screws it up is not these schools and it's not the coaches. You know, it's the early signing period, which starts December 15th. It's December 15th till December 17th. So the college football playoff is not played before the signing period, okay? And then, you know, the mid-year JC transfer, that's in December till January as well. The regular period's in February, but by then, you know, most guys are kind of gobbled up. Plus, you have the portal. Like, you can't wait. You can't wait. Now, could LSU, could Notre Dame let him coach? Sure, but they don't want him to. Like, but you're going to make Brian Kelly out to be the bad guy. There's no question. Once he told me he was taking that job, they're like, bye-bye. Did this happen to me when I was at ESPN? I told them in July I was going on vacation. They kind of put it to me, like, what do you want to do? And I was like, I think I'm going to take this job. They're like, okay, you're good here. I was like, no, I'll come back. My contract's till September 15th. You know, I'll be a pro. And like, nah, we're good. That's what work does. Cowherd was the one guy who tried to come back, and yeah, it didn't end well. I can't remember what he said, but it was something innocuous about something baseball or whatever that I was like, what? But it was one, if he was under contract, they would have had his back. They didn't, so they didn't. But to answer your question, it's about recruiting that you have to have a guy. You have to have the next guy. Got to have the next guy. Got to have him ready to go. Doug Gottlieb Show here on Fox Sports Radio. Anything else, John?
No, that it just seems very, I know life isn't great. Life isn't fair. Life sucks sometimes on how things go about. It's not, nothing's perfect. It just seems like a very malicious type of stuff to go on and to you know, and somebody may say to you or me, well, it's the kids don't care. I mean, they're trying to go to NFL and they're, but I don't know. Maybe they do. Like, if
no, they care. They yeah, care. About they care about the head coach.
We play.
Some care about the school. It depends on the place. By the way, Lincoln Riley's buyout was $4.5 million.
Yeah.
So whoever, if OU hires a sitting head coach, they'll have to pay that buyout to pay the buyout with Lincoln Riley's buyout money, right? So it becomes a wash. And they were going to have to give him a new contract. I don't think they wanted to go to the nines or tens per year. I think some schools are just like, look, like we're like $5 or $6 million a year is good. It is interesting that LSU now has two of the winningest coaches at their previous program, right? Women's basketball and now football, that were basically disgruntled with their athletic directors, and so they left.
And it's interesting, too, because we heard Isaac talk about how they already asked Urban Meyer about, you know, another job. And it's not shocking why reporters...
Well, he was an assistant there.
Right, but it's not shocking why reporters ask these questions over and over again, because these guys... This is why. This is why these questions are asked on a constant basis, and these guys are like, ah, how can you ask me that? Like, no, well, we can, because two guys just bolted in like one day.
Yes, and Brian Kelly answered that question last week and said, you know, something along the lines of, a fairy godmother wants to pay me, what was it, $250 million? Well, then I'll have to listen, but otherwise I'm not leaving. Well, it wasn't $250 million, but it was $100 million, and he got it. Everybody has their price. I mean, John, you wouldn't be working if not for the fact that we pay you a couple million dollars a year, right?
You should hear about my buyout, Doug.
Yeah, John's buyout, it's hefty. It's definitely hefty. I mean, look, it's part of your level of success, and at some point, we'll all be able to achieve that.